Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, we're back on the Ropes Boxing Radio Show. I'm host Jenna Jay, along with my co-host Jeff Ciani, Nick Powers. We have a special guest for you to open up the show. That would be Vicious Vivian Harris, coming off his controversial fourth-round technical knockout loss to Lucas Matisse. How's it going today, Vivian?
It's been great. You know, I'm just here. I'm just waiting to hear what's going to be the decision on this this fight that happened this weekend with me.
Maybe you can give us a little bit more detail on that. You were fighting a 25-0 guy by the name of Lucas Matisse. I watched the fight today, and I was seeing it was a very competitive fight. You clearly did some damage to your opponent, and then in the fourth round, it appeared he hit you with a good uppercut, and you kind of leaned forward, and the referee immediately called the fight off. But from your perspective, what happened?
The fight was definitely a competitive fight. Back and forth. The first round, I definitely went the first round. The second round was a close second round. I hurt him in the second round. The third round, I was inside fighting. I give him the third round. The fourth round was back boxing and stuff like that. Feeling good, And I get hit with an uppercut that, didn't do much damage to me, And then, I lean forward to smother him just in case you don't try to throw that uppercut again or a different punch, I'm an experienced fighter. I know what to do when you get hit with a punch, And it wasn't a punch that, really stunned me or nothing like that. It was something that he chose, and I try not to get hit again with it, And then the referee just come between and stop the fight. And it was like, I didn't even know what was going on when the referee stopped it. I thought, and he tried to take my mouthpiece out of my mouth. And I'm like, what are you doing? Lucas didn't even know what was going on, at that point, because none of us was hurt, We didn't know what was going on until he just waved Lucas' hand up in the air. And that's when I started going crazy, because I'm like, wow, what is this,
Yeah, I was definitely very shocked when I saw that. I thought originally, when I saw him come in between me, I thought he was going to break you up, and all of a sudden the fight's called off. I'm like, whoa, that's...
Yeah, it's like, this is why I thought, I'm like, what's going on? It was like, I was surprised, man. It was really surprised. It was like, wow, it's the next chapter in my career right there. I never go through something like that in boxing. I guess I just got to go through everything in boxing,
Yeah. Now, what exactly happened after the fight? You briefly said something about you were very upset about it, clearly for a good reason. But what happened with all the mess that happened after the fight?
I talked to my promoters and them, and they definitely was there supporting what was going on, and they was like, they're definitely going to get me get this overturned, and they're going to definitely work towards it and get a rematch, and that's what he's doing right now, and I really appreciate that, I talked to Golden Boy, I talked to Eric Gomez, and they said they're going to work towards it, and that's what they're doing as we speak on the phone right now.
You said that. Now, how soon do you think you'll be able to get back in the ring after that? Usually there's a 3-month suspension period.
Well, if they overturn, they have to turn the decision around. Turn no contest, because that was definitely not a stoppage. It was not a knockout. I was not hurt. We both was fighting. Was better shots passed along that whole four round than that little punch. So they have to overturn the decision, and once they overturn the decision, that's when we're going to get the rematch.
All right. Well, we're also joined by my co-host, Jeff Ciani. I'm sure he'd like to get into this a little bit more. Jeff?
Hi, Vivian. I'd just like to first say, Vivian, that was definitely one of the worst stoppages I've ever seen in all my years as a fan. But I'm going to be honest with you, Vivian. Through the first three rounds, I thought that he was in control of the fight, and that he was basically just outworking you a little bit through those first three rounds. But in the beginning of the fourth round, it appeared to me that you started opening up things a little bit more, and you started throwing more power shots of your own, and I thought that you were having a lot of success in the fourth round, up until the point he caught you with that shot where it inexplicably stopped the fight. My question for you is, what did you start doing differently in the fourth round that enabled you to get to him more?
I think what I did is the same thing I was doing in the first round, boxing, moving around the ring. That's what opened the swelling on his left eye, his right eye, his left eye, one of those eyes, with boxing, sticking the jab, moving. And as the fight go on, I get more relaxed and get more comfortable with what I was doing. And then when I was in there in the third round, fighting with him, I figured that that's the kind of fight that he wants. But the first round was better for me, and the second round, a couple points in the second round was good for me. So I said, let me get back to that. And I mean, my corner keep telling me, yo, Viv, stay outside. And by they telling me that, and me knowing that because of what I went through in the first, second, and third, you know, me knowing that, okay, this is the right thing to do, is what my trainers have been telling me, to stay outside and box, and that's what I go ahead and do in the fourth round.
Now, Vivian, the shot that he caught you with, was it a shot that you didn't see coming? How was he able to get that? Because it did look like it stunned you a little bit, but by no means enough to stop the fight.
No, it definitely didn't stun me. You know what I mean? It's a shot that he choked. You know what I mean? And I probably get caught with it, but it wasn't no shot to stun me. It wasn't no punch that stunned me. You know what I mean? I think the first couple of rounds, I got hit with better shots than that. You know what I mean? I blocked better shots than that. You know what I mean? But, you know what I mean? He caught me with a shot, but it wasn't nothing like something that to stop the fight. You know what I mean? It wasn't something that hurt me or, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Man, it's not even a question to talking about that, because if a fighter get hit, you know what I mean? Number one, you stop and give them an eight count. You don't stop the fight just like that. You know what I mean? So unless it's really badly hurt, you know what I mean? The picture shows right there. You know what I mean? So I don't even have to explain it, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? Because it shows clearly what happened. You know what I mean? And for me to explain and all that, it don't even make no sense to me right now, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? Because me talking about it and thinking about what happened, it's just getting me more upset, you know what I'm saying? Because it was definitely was not right what happened Saturday night, you know what I mean? So I'm sorry about that, you know what I mean? But it definitely don't, you know, it really don't add up what happened there. It definitely don't, you know what I mean? It definitely don't.
I agree with you, Vivian. I agree that you actually do have nothing to explain, because the premature stoppage speaks for itself, and I think it was one
exactly.
of the worst,
you know what
I've
mean?
Ever seen. Absolutely. Absolutely, and I know a lot of people, some people have even said it was the worst stoppage they've ever seen. But quickly, back to the fight, if the ref hadn't stopped it there and hadn't screwed you over with that premature stoppage, how do you think the fight would have gone from there, and do you think that you would have been able to get him out of there eventually?
Man, my goal and the way I trained for my fight, I prepared for 10 rounds. I think the fight was supposed to be an 8-round fight, you know what I mean? But who knows, if I were to be a 10-round fight, I don't know, but I was just training for 10 rounds, and I trained hard to go 10 rounds. I know he's a strong starter. All his fights came in the first couple of rounds of knockout. And I know once I get past those couple of rounds, I was going to tattoo him. And that's what I was doing in the first round. In the second round, you know what I mean, it was even, because I'm the type of fighter, I can't have someone bullying me along the ring too much unless I'm really comfortable with it and I'm getting my way with it, you know what I mean? And the second round, when that happened, you know what I mean, that's when I stay in there. You know what I mean? I make that fight a little close. You know what I mean? The third round, I go back doing the same thing and give him that. I give him the third round. Clearly, I give it to him. But then when I catch myself, I was like, yo, no, this is not a fight for him. This is not a fight. I can't fight the fight that he wants. That's what he wants. Okay, let me stay outside. I'm a taller fighter. And I could hit him with good shots outside. And that's why I go outside in the fourth round. And from there, once I was getting that good performance in the fourth round, I would have come up back in the fifth round. I would have keep doing what makes. Will get me. We're gonna get me the win, and maybe it will end up in a stoppage, or I would beat him on the scoring point. You know what I mean? But my training and everything was for the whole fight. I didn't go in there to knock him out. I go in there to win the fight. You know what I mean? However it takes me to win that fight, that's how I would win the fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, Vivian, this fight actually took place in Mexico, and for all intents and purposes, it was considered neutral ground because your opponent was from Argentina. He had not fought really in Mexico before. But, I mean, what do you think was going through the referee's mind to stop the fight there? What do you think he was thinking?
I don't know what's going through the referee's mind, you know what I'm saying, to be honest with you. I mean, I know the Mexican, you can't lie to the Mexican boxing fans. They was definitely booing this decision. When I came out of the dressing room, they all was supporting me and asking for autographs and pictures and stuff like that, and asking me if we're going to get a rematch and stuff like that, you know what I mean? So they definitely didn't agree on that decision. So and when I went to the doctor to get checked with the doctor said the referee is just, he don't know what a referee did. He's just somebody that, you know what I mean, probably not belong in that ring, you know what I mean? Or you shouldn't ever referee again to doing something like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, what do you think of your opponent, Lucas Matisse? What do you think of his boxing ability?
Lucas Matisse, he's a good fighter. Just a fighter that just come forward and just try to get his opponent out of there. He just, you know what I mean, he just come to fight, you know what I mean? And I'm a fighter that I come to fight too, and I could do it both. I could fight and I could box, you know what I mean? And, you know what I mean, it's a lot of things I learned from the fight, you know what I mean, that in the rematch, I'm definitely going to get him out of there.
Yeah, so that'd be your plan. You'd try to go for the knockout in the rematch if you're able to get it.
No, I'm not going for the rematch. You know what I mean? But the way I'm gonna train for the fight, you know what I mean? I'm definitely gonna get the knockout, but I'm not going there for the rematch. But it's just certain things that, you know what I mean, I'm gonna put in place that is gonna make the fight easier for me.
All right. Well, Vivian, we're off the drum with my co-host Nick Powers. Nick.
Hey, Vivian, just wanted to say that you had a good effort out the other night, so you have to give yourself some props for that, and we definitely here at OTR give you props for that. My question is, you actually just said that you aren't necessarily aiming for a rematch with Matisse. If that's the case, where do you expect to go from here in your career?
Well, the goal is, my goal is, you know what I mean, my people is working on getting this decision overturned to a no contest and a rematch. You know what I mean, I definitely want the rematch with Matisse, you know what I mean, because, you know what I mean, I want to show to the world that, you know what I mean, Vivian belongs back on top, and this is the fight I need to put me where I belong, you know what I mean, and is getting it in the teeth.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your career, you've had a lot of unfortunate incidents. I mean, recently, last August, you had the fight with Bolaños where you got hit with the headbutt, which was a very scary incident. You had a couple of losses that seemed to derail your career a tad bit with Mousa and Junior Witter, but you always seem to come back and you still seem to have a lot of confidence. What is it that helps you to keep going, especially after an incident such as this with such a premature stoppage and some of the other unfortunate incidents you've had in your career? What is it that you have inside you that helps you to keep moving forward?
Because I'm a professional fighter. I'm a fighter, you know what I mean, and I believe in me. You know what I mean? I don't listen to no one, and I don't listen to the critics, you know what I mean? And I believe in me, and I know what God put me on this earth for. And I know, you know what I mean, this is my talent that I have to make a better life of myself and take care of my family. And I put 100% into my work, you know what I mean? Like you put 100% into your work, you know what I mean? And I don't let no one tell me that I can't do nothing when it comes to going into that ring. I believe in myself, you know what I mean? And that's just Vivian Harris, you know what I mean?
All right. Well, Vivian, I have just a couple more questions before I let you off the line. One of the ones is what happens if this fight does not get overturned? What happens if the results stay the same and Lucas Matisse goes in a different direction? Where do you see yourself going?
Man, I'm not even thinking like that right now. I definitely think I got great promoters behind me, and I definitely think they're going to do the best to get this decision overturned and get me the rematch. You know what I mean? If they don't get me the rematch, well, I guess I got to go a different route, but I definitely, this decision, I definitely got to overturn. You know what I mean? And I think by presenting the tape and showing it to the commissioner over there in Mexico, it's definitely going to return, because I think it's not everybody is bad. You know what I mean? It was just a wrong call. You know what I mean? It was just
yeah.
a wrong call by the referees. You know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? Everybody treated me well when I was in Mexico. I had a great time in Mexico. You know what I mean? But it was just a wrong call at the wrong time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So is there anything you want to say to all the fans out there that are...
You know what I mean? And, you know what I mean, people do make mistakes at times, you know what I mean, and directly make a mistake, and, you know what I mean, it's okay, you know what I mean, but it just got to return, you know what I mean, and if the referee be honest and know that he make a mistake, that's cool, you know what I mean, I forgive him for that, you know what I mean, but if you're
yeah.
going to sit there and think that you did something right, I can't forgive you for that, but I definitely, if you could look at the tape and know that he make a wrong call, you know what I mean, because this is my life, this is my career, you know what I mean. And that's how I take care of my family, you know what I mean? So I give him the benefit of the doubt that, yeah, you did make a wrong call, but you have to accept that, you know what I mean? I believe that. I know that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. And the fans are really getting behind you and supporting you, and that's what I want to ask you. What do you have to say to all the fans out there that are supporting you in this, that are, you know, they're kind of outraged by this decision here and, you know, are still supporting you?
Yeah, because the fans know that, you know what I mean, like, I lose a fight and I come back and I win my fight, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not letting my, you know what I mean? People don't like to see people's talent go down the drain. You know what I mean? They know I'm not letting my talent go down the drain. And they know how hard I work, how hard I train, and how long I'm all dedicated to my fight. You know what I mean? My whole team know that. The people know that. The fans know that. And they know when I come out there to fight, I come to put on my best. You know what I mean? And they see me in tougher fights than this before. You know what I mean? I went down, I got up, and I win my fight. So if someone threw a punch at me, there's no way to come in the middle and stop the fight. And this is Vivian Harris you talking about. You know what I mean? A 2-time world champion. You know what I mean? You just don't come in there and just type of fight just like that. No, it's not that. It's that. You know what I mean? So they know when I come to fight, I come to fight. They know how hard I prepare, how hard I train. They follow me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I definitely know what you mean, and I certainly agree with them being outraged about the decision here. And we certainly here at OTR hope we wish you the best in that, and we hope that that fight gets overturned and you get a rematch there because it was unjust, and we'd like to see you get another opportunity.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's two good fighters, you know what I mean? I'll come fight to the end, you know what I mean? At least give me the chance to lose or win, you know what I mean? Give me the chance to go flat on my back. That's what the boxing fans, that's what boxing is about. Boxing is not about just stopping a fight because you want to stop a fight. You know what I mean? Boxing, okay, if I was hurt, I understand that. If I was taking a lot of punches in the lung, you know what I mean? I understand that, and you have to protect me. I understand that. But it was none of that. You know what I mean? You saw it on YouTube. It was none of that. You know what I mean? To you to be like, okay, you was protecting me. Protect me. I want you to protect me. You know what I mean? But don't protect me like that. That's not how you protect me. You're taking away from me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, certainly. You certainly are given a raw deal there, and I think the right thing for all people involved is to have this rematch here and get it settled once and for all, and give you that chance to win because your chance was taken away.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Give me my chance to win or lose, whatever is going to be the outcome. Let it be the outcome the right way, not the wrong way.
All right. Well, Vivian, it's been a pleasure speaking to you again on the show. Like I said before, we do hope that this does get overturned and you do get the rematch, and we wish you the best of luck in your future fights.
Well, thank you, and I just leave it in God's hands. Whatever you have in store for me, I just leave it up to him, and he's definitely going to definitely do something right for me. I'm not worrying about it.
All right. Thank you very much, Vivian.
Thank you. All right.
Thanks, Vivian.
Yes.
Hi, guys. That was Vicious Vivian Harris talking about his controversial loss to Lucas Matisse. So I'm going to go over to you, Rummy. What are your thoughts about first that fight and, you know, and what Vivian had to say?
Well, I think Vivian, this is the second time we've had him on the ropes here, and I think he's a great guest and one of the nicer guys we've ever had on the show, so it's a pleasure to speak with him again. And, you know, Jenna, regarding the fight, we both saw the fight. We both know that the stoppage was bullshit and that, you know, it doesn't even necessarily mean Vivian was going to win. I did personally think that he started coming on stronger in the beginning of the fourth, and I thought that he started doing some of his best work in the fourth round and that he was clearly winning the round up until the point where that punch happened and the fight got stopped. We don't know what would have happened after that because the referee did not allow this one to go to its logical conclusion. It's a shame when stuff like that happens because it just, you know, fans get turned off to the sport when that happens. Even the diehard fans that aren't going to get turned off to it, they're sick of the bad stoppages, the bad decisions, and all that stuff. And it's just never good when stuff like that happens. And I do feel bad for Vivian because it really was one of the worst stoppages I've ever seen.
Nick?
Yeah, I have to agree with Rami. First of all, Vivian is a great guest to have on the show, but I completely agree with what Vivian said and the fact that he wants the ref to be able to protect him, but that's not the right way to do it. We understand there's a lot of cases where people get seriously hurt, Muhammad Ali being the most evident case of people getting hurt in boxing and combat sports, but that was just a terrible stoppage. I mean, Vivian got buzzed. Every fighter's been buzzed, and every fighter gets buzzed, and the ref just made a really, really premature stoppage. Like Rummy said, Vivian was starting to get in his groove a little bit, and it really sucks because he wasn't able to try and do everything that he could in order to try and win the fight. I think he was on his way to it, but the ref stoppage just kind of negated that, so I just hope he can get back in the ring as soon as possible, try and avenge this loss and keep his career on the right path. Hopefully he can get another title shot before he retires.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you here. And one thing I agree most with Vivian is his sentiment that give him the chance to win or lose. Give him the chance in the fight. He wasn't really given a chance. I mean, he fought to the fourth round and the referee took it away, and that's what he deserves. He deserves another shot at it. That fight, if anything, should be really overturned to a no contest because he was not given a chance to win the fight. They took it away from him, and he deserves that. So we at OTR do hope that he gets that shot. Hopefully Golden Boy Promotions can put that fight together and he gets a rematch and, you know, get a final result in that, see what happens. But moving on, guys, there's some other big news this past weekend, and it was coming out of the boxing world and a pretty, not a huge fight, but it's an interesting fight. It would be Miguel Cotto versus Yuri Foreman. They're talking about it being possibly at Yankee Stadium. Now, there hasn't been a match at Yankee Stadium since Ken Norton fought Muhammad Ali for the title. I'm going to go over to you, Rummy. You frequently go to New York. You live in New Jersey. How would you feel about an outdoor fight with Miguel Cotto and Yuri Foreman?
Well, one thing that I like about that is if it's actually at Yankee Stadium, I'll be able to attend it. So I kind of hope that that's the case. But beyond that, as a Yankees fan, I didn't realize that that was the last fight at Yankee Stadium that you just mentioned there, Jenna. But I would love to watch a fight at Yankee Stadium. And I remember, I think it was when Bernard Hopkins was getting ready to fight Cal Zaghi and they were determining a venue. I'm pretty sure that was the fight that Hopkins said he wanted to have a last fight at the old Yankee Stadium. And I remember at the time thinking, what a terrific idea that was because of the history of fights that had taken place at Yankee Stadium, that it was closing down and that Bernard wanted to have the fight there, I believe, at one point. It wound up not being there, but I thought that that would have been great. And, you know, it's a shame that they never did have a last fight at the old Yankee Stadium, but if Cotto is going to fight Foreman in the new Yankee Stadium, I think that's a nice fight to kick things off, and hopefully it won't be the last fight at the new Yankee Stadium, and I'm pretty excited about this, I got to say.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to see that, too. I mean, I haven't seen many outdoor fights at, you know, at baseball stadiums in quite a while. It's something that used to happen quite frequently in the past, but now it seems something of the past, and I think it'd be interesting to see. I mean, it'd be a huge crowd, something more that, you know, at something that Madison Square Garden really can't provide. I mean, Madison Square Garden's got a capacity somewhere around 23,000. I mean, Yankee Stadium has over 50,000, so it'll be a heck of an atmosphere, so I hope that definitely happens. But, Nick, quickly, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's definitely a good look for boxing. With Pacquiao and Quadi being in the new Cowboys Stadium, that's definitely breaking it into the forefront of the sports world. And I think that for Cotto and Foreman to be at Yankee Stadium would be a great look for boxing. As far as a baseball fan, I would have liked it to be in Fenway Park, and I'm sure Jenna would agree with me. But at the same time, Yankee Stadium had a lot of history, the old Yankee Stadium, with some great, great fights that happened there. Ali and Norton, Jenna, like you said, was a great fight. Sugar Ray Robinson fought there plenty of times, and it's definitely a good way to kick off, hopefully, a new sense of history in the new stadium to have some big fights there. And to have Cotto fight in New York on the eve of the Puerto Rican Day Parade would definitely be another good look, as he's brought out some great crowds in the past. And to do it in Yankee Stadium instead of MSG is an even better look, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I agree with you, and I hope that it does happen. That's the thing in boxing, though. For some reason, there always seems to be politics that keep it from happening. But apparently everything's being set in motion where this fight can, possibly take place at Yankee Stadium, in the sense that they've cleared the date. The date is available, and they're working out a few more minor details. Right now they're saying it's a 99% chance that it could happen there. I think it's pretty damn good, so hopefully it does happen. I'd be pretty excited for it. Now, something else that's pretty interesting coming out of this fight is Emmanuel Stewart will be training Yuri Foreman for this fight. Now, that's pretty big news, because Yuri Foreman had a good trainer, but a very nondescript trainer. Now he gets an all, you know, Hall of Fame trainer in Emmanuel Stewart to help him train him for his biggest fight in his career. He's currently undefeated. He's a champion. I'm going to go over to you, Rami. You talk to Emmanuel Stewart quite often. What do you think about this move?
I think that this move could represent some pretty bad news for Cotto. And actually, regardless of what the outcome in the fight is, this is not good news for Cotto, because Cotto is coming off of a devastating loss when a lot of people, myself included, are not exactly sure that he ever recovered fully from the Margarito loss. And I know Yuri Foreman is kind of viewed as a non-threatening opponent, not the biggest puncher, not the best boxer, so I almost feel bad for Yuri Foreman in the sense that Pacquiao was talking about fighting him, and Cotto is now fighting him, and there were rumors of other fights with him, and people pretty much just write Foreman off as a joke. And I think that does him a great injustice, because he is a good fighter. And with Cotto not knowing where he is mentally, and Stewart now in the corner of Foreman, you know, this fight is by no means a give-me for Cotto. I think a lot of boxing fans assume that Cotto is going to win, but I think these people are also quick to forget that, you know, his mentality and mental state was questioned after his loss to Margarito. His loss to Pacquiao was equally, if not more, devastating. And to jump into this fight, he'll be moving up and wait for this fight. This might not be a good fight for Cotto, and Emmanuel Stewart helping Yuri Foreman out only helps his chances.
All right. Nick, what are your thoughts on Emmanuel Stewart training Yuri Foreman, and how do you think he'll help him?
Well, the obvious answer to that is it's Emmanuel Stewart in your corner. Having Emmanuel Stewart in your corner isn't going to hurt you in any way, I don't think. I mean, some people might say that Jermaine Taylor could attest to that a little differently. But at the same time, I really don't think Stewart hurt Taylor as much as just didn't mesh with him. Stewart has immense knowledge of the sport. He's trained a huge list of champions. He made so many great, great impactful moves as a trainer in the sport of boxing, and his gym is legendary, the Kronk Gym, obviously, everybody knows. And I don't think that Foreman could have made a better pick to get somebody in his corner for this fight. And it's the fact that this fight's a little ways away is going to give Foreman more time to be with Stewart and try to adapt to his style and his technique to learn from him more. And I think it's also very interesting because it was rumored that Stewart was going to be training Cotto a little while back. Nothing was ever confirmed, and obviously that didn't happen, but I think that the fact that Cotto was in the mix of names that Stewart could have been in the corner with is definitely interesting. As far as the fight itself, Cotto's definitely making a pretty respectful move right now after coming off that Pacquiao loss, just like Rummy said, and it's going to be interesting to see how he copes with the weight and having a guy like Foreman have such a legendary name in his corner. And it's also going to be interesting to see if Cotto ends up with a new trainer. Ronnie Shields and Buddy McGirt were in the mix last I heard, but nothing's been confirmed yet. So it's definitely, definitely interesting, and it'll be pretty cool to see what happens coming up. And I don't think that Foreman having Stewart in his corner is definitely a bad move. I think it's one of the best ones he could have made.
I certainly agree with you there. It is certainly one of the best moves you can make because, you know, one of the things he doesn't have great power for the division. I mean, Miguel Cotto will be moving up. It will be an adjustment for him. But, you know, when you're going into the biggest fight of your career, you want some experience and a guy that can put together a very good game plan. I mean, if you look what Emmanuel Stewart did with Vladimir Klitschko, he took Vladimir Klitschko's weaknesses away, which was his chin. He found a way to protect it and get the best out of his fighter. And that's what I want to see him do with Yuri Foreman. That's something I think he can do with Yuri Foreman. And now this fight becomes a little bit more interesting in the sense that, yeah, I mean, it can be a little bit more competitive. It might come down to the distance, and you never know what's going to happen. But I think his chances got a lot better of Emmanuel Stewart in his corner. But moving on, there was another announcement. Apparently, Chad Dawson will be fighting Jean Pascal. Now, this is an interesting fight. It's going to be in June. I'm going to go over to you, Rummy. How do you feel about this fight being made? It's going to be a unification match.
I'm thrilled because out of all the options available for Dawson out there, the one that I'd be most interested in, if it could have worked out with the timing and everything, would be Cloud. But I think Jean Pascal makes a very interesting matchup for Dawson. And, you know, there aren't too many people out there that I think could give Dawson a better test than Pascal. I'm very excited about this fight. I know this isn't the most, you know, news-flashing, biggest fight that could be made out there, but I think as a fan, this is a fight I'm very excited to see. And my initial thoughts are that I do believe Dawson is going to win. I do believe that Dawson is now reaching a point in his career where he's really stepping it up a level, and he's just such a great athlete and such a fantastic boxer that I do think he will see victory, but I don't think he's going to see victory easily. I think Pascal is going to test him, and I think that we might finally see Dawson in one of those fights where people say, wow, that guy can fight, whereas after most Dawson fights, the fans are left kind of lackluster where they aren't overly impressed. Dawson does everything good, but for whatever reason, his fights just typically seem to lack drama. I think there might be some drama in this one, and I am very excited about this fight.
I am myself because, you know, you're not seeing Chad Dawson in there as an old man. You're not seeing him in four consecutive fights against older fighters or against journeymen, heavyweights somehow get a ranking. This is going to be the biggest, toughest test of his career. He's in with a younger champion, a guy who can give him a test. I mean, a guy who does have power, who has performed this weight relatively well, and a guy that, you know what, has some of the same tools that Dawson has, and, you know, it's speed versus speed, and I think it's going to be a very interesting match. Both guys can box. Who's going to win? It's actually almost a pick-up fight, in my opinion, there. Jean Pascal is very good. He's a very good fighter. The fight will take place in Canada, so that does leave a little room for that card to get a lot tighter. I think Chad Dawson will probably still earn a split decision win somewhere around there. I think one of the cards will be a little hinky due to the location, but I think he will win. I think it'll be a good fight, and I can't wait to see it. But I'm going to go over to Nick. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with both of you guys. I got Dawson winning this fight, but I also agree with Rummy in the sense that I think Pascal is going to provide for him One of the best fights and one of the hardest fights that he's seen in a while, probably since the first Glenn Johnson fight, and he may even be provided with a tougher test in that fight. He got rocked in that fight. I'm not really sure that he's going to expose himself too much to the point where Pascal is going to be able to hurt him, but at the same time, anything's possible. I think that Dawson's probably going to use his boxing very well. He's going to counterpunch effectively. I think that Pascal's going to do everything he can to make him work for it. But I also do think that Dawson's athleticism and his boxing ability, like Rummy cited earlier, is going to help him to overcome. The fact that the fight's in Canada is a little bit suspect as far as if the fight should go to a decision. I'm not too sure Dawson's going to stop Pascal. He's been in some serious fights, and he's got a pretty good beard. So I'd have to actually agree with Jenna and think that Dawson will probably pull out a split decision, even if it's quite evident that he deserves a unanimous decision. But at the same time, I don't think that Dawson's going to cut it too close to the point where anybody can make an argument for the decision to go to Pascal. So I got to pick Dawson to win this fight as well.
All right, so we're all in agreement there. One thing I do have to say is I think this is great for the light heavyweight division, because ever since Bernard Hawkins was taken out of the championship reign, Joe Kazagi took over and retired. I mean, there hasn't been a one champion here. And I think this fight here should be for the ring championship, if anyone deserves it, because, you know, you have Bernard Hopkins fighting Roy Jones Jr. is way past his prime. It's a meaningless fight. It does nothing for the division. But this fight right here helps give a little clarity to have a guy that's already won two straight fights at light heavyweight. You have another guy who's made numerous defenses, who's had numerous belts. It's a unification belt, and you know what? When this guy wins, I think you can consider him the light heavyweight champion. At least in my opinion, I think that's what should be on the line since fight the Ring Magazine Championship, because these are two of the best light heavyweights you can put out there, and you know what? They're fighting against each other, and winner take all, at least in my opinion. But anyways, guys, it's time for our interview with Andre Durrell. Unfortunately, we were unable to bring it to you live due to a last-minute switch of flights for Andre Durrell, and we had to do it just before the show, but we have it for you now, and hope you guys enjoy. Andre Durrell, welcome to the On the Ropes radio show. How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're happy to have you on the show. Andre, something I'm sure the fans would be pretty interested in hearing about is why your March 6th bout with Bobby Abraham got pushed back to March 27th. There was something in the news about an injury of sorts. Maybe you can give us a little more detail.
Well, in spine, the past week, I sustained a back injury, and I didn't want to risk the fight, you know, so that's the reason why I was postponed. Just went to the doctor, made sure everything was okay. Just pretty much threw my back out, and I'm just working on it right now.
All right. Now, with this delay of nearly 3 weeks, do you think you'll be fully prepared for your March 27th bout?
I'm actually hoping that will be the case, you know, because I've still been wrestling. So I'm hoping that will be the case. I know for certain this fight will go on, but, you know, I'm hoping that's the case. I'm hoping we can get in there as soon as possible because I'm in shape, I'm working hard, and I'm ready to show the world what I can do. So hopefully it does fall on the 27th.
All right. Now, you said you've been in preparations for a while. Now you're taking a little bit of a break. But how have your preparations been going, trying to study the style of Arthur Abraham preparing for this matchup?
Well, pretty good. You know, I've been on my A game. I've been watching on what I need to do, watching the tapes, and just staying focused on the situation at hand, you know. So everything's going fairly well. I believe I'll have a solid game plan come fight time.
All right. Now, Andre, in your last bout with Carl Froch, there's a lot of controversy surrounding it. It was a very close split decision loss. Mm-hmm. And some people feel, at least a lot, most people and most writers feel that you actually won that bout. But how do you feel about the fight with Froch now?
Froch alone, Froch himself, he doesn't bother me at all. You know, the decision still bothers me a little. You know, I have that loss on my record, you know. And you know, I look at it and I move forward with confidence. You know, like everyone said, most people believe I won the fight, and I do as well. You know, I put in the work and I put in the time, and you know, unfortunately, I just didn't come out with the victory. But you know, I'm moving forward now, and the world's going to see how I respond, and I know it's going to be with perfect. I mean with excellence. So you know, I'm just move forward and fight and go on.
Yeah. Now, thinking back though on that fight, is there anything that you would have done differently that you think could have helped make the result a little bit more, you know, shown a little bit more in your direction so you got the decision?
Well, I actually could have threw more punches in the inside. I was focused on making sure he didn't get his punches in and the outside. I mean, in the inside, and that was the major mistake that I actually made in that fight.
Yeah, your last fight with Carl Froch took place overseas. Now your fight with Arthur Abraham is supposed to take place in California. How much better do you feel about going into this fight, knowing that you're on your home soil?
Well, I won't have to worry about getting there a week ahead of time, simply because of so far distance travel. You know that that flight can take a toll on you. I don't know if it has on me or not, but you know I felt excellent in the fight. But you know my hometown, I mean my country, my crowd, you know, and I believe that, you know, I'll have full confidence mentally going in this fight.
Great. Well, Andre, we're also joined by my co-host, Jeff Ciani. Jeff?
Hi, Andre. It's a pleasure to speak with you. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, with the other two first-round matchups in the Super 6, whose victory impressed you more, Andre Ward's victory against Mikkel Kessler or Arthur Abraham's victory over Jermaine Taylor?
Well, Andre Ward, and I'm sure I speak for everyone in the boxing world when I say that. He showed an excellent performance. He went in there with a solid game plan, and he came out victorious. You know, Kessler was one of the favorites, and he got in there, and he made him, Ward got in there and made him look like a little boy. You know, it was a few headbutts in there, but all in all, he dominated that fight, and he showed the world that he's in that tournament to stay.
Now, you actually face Andre Ward, and you're scheduled to face him, I believe, in the third round of the tournament. How do you think that match will go down?
You have boxer against boxer. You know, I take more chances. He's more careful, you know, so we both have to go in there with a solid game plan. But I believe it's going to be an excellent fight and something the crowd is going to be yearning to see.
Now, in the second round, aside from your fight with Arthur Abraham, the person that you had the controversial loss to, Carl Froch, will be facing Mikkel Kessler, who just lost to Ward.
Mm-hmm.
What are your opinions on that fight?
I'm really not too focused on that fight, but I said that before I fought Froch. I don't believe he's going to beat Kessler. You know, he have a better chance to get Abraham if you ask me, but I don't see him beating Kessler. Kessler's a great boxer still, and his confidence is still going to be through the roof, knowing what's at stake in this tournament. You know, everybody's coming a little bit stronger, a little bit harder. But I'm not counting Frost out at all, but I believe Kessler's just a better man.
And then there's another second round fight, and that one is between Andre Ward and newcomer to the tournament, Alan Green. Your thoughts on that?
Alan Green's coming in this tournament full-fledged. He has nothing to lose and everything to gain. He knows this is a gift, you know, so I'm thinking he's going to take it and run with it, not the victory. I believe Andre Ward will come out with the victory, but who knows, simply because the determination that Alan Green has coming in this tournament is, you know, through the roof, you know. So I know he's going to come hard. I know it's going to be a great fight, but I do see Ward pulling out the slight victory.
Now, Andre, how do you feel about Arthur Abraham's last performance against Jermaine Taylor? A lot of people question whether Jermaine should have been even in the tournament, but how do you feel about Arthur Abraham's performance against him?
It was good. It was Arthur Abraham. You know, you see him every fight the same way. You know, he's the careful puncher. You know, he has great defense, and it's really hard to break. But, you know, if you make all the right moves and utilize the ring, then I believe he's easily beatable, you know, not just with me, but with any boxer who's disciplined enough to get in there and be able to handle a solid 12 rounds. But I thought it was a good performance from Jermaine Taylor as well. You know, unfortunately, the reason why Jermaine got knocked out is we all know it. He's still right there like he was stuck on the mat before the knockdown. He stood right in front of him, and he wasn't supposed to give him that opportunity. If he wouldn't give him that opportunity, it would have been a decision for Abraham, but he stood there and gave Abraham a shot, and that's what caused Jermaine Taylor's demise.
Now, Andre, you also have a height and reach advantage over Arthur Abraham, but what else do you see as your advantage in this fight?
Quickness and my ability to counterpunch two or three times better than any other opponent he's ever faced. You know, so I'm going in there with full confidence, like I said, and I'm just ready to get in there and show the world what I can do.
Is there any one thing Arthur Abraham does in the ring that you think might be a challenge for you?
He's explosive. I mean, he's explosive, and he's undefeated. So he's super confident. So he hits hard, he's explosive, any one punch can end the fight. You know, I know that won't happen. But you know, you don't fight too many fighters that with the explosiveness that Arthur Abraham has. He knows how to come out of that shell real fast. He's quick with the hooks he throws, and he's just an explosive fighter, so you have to be careful going in through the ropes with Arthur.
Now, Andre, Arthur is known as a notoriously slow starter who usually starts turning things up late, and he often gives away a lot of the early rounds. Do you plan on taking advantage of that characteristic of his from past fights?
If that does come about, you know, who knows how he's going to start when he comes and gets in there and face me. You know, I'm young. You know, he knows I have great foot movement. He knows I can get out of there, you know. So he might press his luck early. He might press on for early, and that's what I'm getting prepared for. I'm not getting prepared for him for the last six rounds with Arthur Abraham. I'm getting ready for the full 12. So who knows how he's going to come. I just know I'll be ready when the time comes.
Now, changing things up a little bit here, one of the questions we like to ask a lot of our guests on the show is the story about how they first started using their boxing nickname. And I was wondering, Andre, if you could tell us a little bit when you first started using the nickname The Matrix.
An amateur, you know, the movie had just came out. I'm not sure if I could have been 17, 18 years old when the movie actually came out. And people noticed that, you know, I had the ability to slip punches, leaning my back, you know, back real far. So the coaches started calling me, the boxers started calling me The Matrix. They actually gave me the moniker The Matrix. And because of the ability to lean back so far, I missed with punches just as they do in the movie with the bullets, you know. So it was the quick hands, the quick feet, and the movement that gave me the moniker The Matrix. And I owe that to my fans and my coaches.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. And changing things up again a little bit, one of the men that you've fought, and I believe you beat in the amateurs, is Donyell Livingston. And he's looking to make his debut fight sometime in the near future. And I was wondering if you could give us your opinions on Donyell and how you think he'll do in the professional ranks.
Well, first off, Donyell, he is a close friend as well. And he's all out determined. You know, I talk to him now on Twitter. You know, I keep in touch with him. He's just an all-out determined fighter. He's ready to get in there and show the world what he's got. You know, so I believe in him. You know, he works hard. He keeps his head up to the man above, and he know what time it is. You know, he knows what he's stepping into. So I believe he'll be ready. It takes a while to get used to it, but he's been training for it ever since we turned pro. You know, so I can see him getting in there and shining.
Andre, now people, when they think back about your career, one of the fights that really defined you early in your career was your fight with Curtis Stevens, and it didn't define you in the best way. Now, thinking about that fight, how important was it for you to show people that you weren't exactly the fighter that you showed in that fight, that you're more exciting than that?
Well, first off, I believe the critics defined me in that fight. The fans knew the type of fighter I really was, and I got a chance to show that. The fight after when I stepped in there with Anthony Henshaw. And, you know, I don't even acknowledge that fight anymore. I don't talk about it, you know, so it doesn't bother me if somebody bring it up. You know, it was three years ago, so, I have no say-so about the fight. If the fighters still think that, if there's people out there that still think I fight like that, then I just let them think it. I don't even talk about that fight. I'm getting on the plane right now. My gate is closing, so I have to get on.
All right, well, I guess I'll just close up with a final question for you. Do you have any predictions for your fight with Arthur Abraham coming up March 27th?
I'll come up with the victory. That's my prediction.
All right. Well, we thank you for being on the Ropes Radio Show. Is there anything you want to say to all your fans out there?
Look forward to getting in the ring. I hope everybody's looking forward to the fight as well, and it'll be a blast.
All right. Have a nice day, Andre.
Thanks, Andre.
Fight. All right, guys, that was our interview with Andre the Matrix Darrell. I'm going to go over to you, Remy. What do you think what do you think about what he had to say about his career, the Super Six, and his past fights?
You know, it was a pleasure to speak with Andre, and I'm really glad to have gotten a chance to speak with him. I believe he is the fourth member of the Super Six tournament we've had on the show. And, you know, with Darrell, I really do think he got a bad deal in the decision in the Frotch fight. I won't call it a robbery, because I think it was a very close fight, and I don't think that giving the fight to Froch was necessarily a bad decision. But personally, I did think that Durrell won the fight, and now he's matched up with Arthur Abraham, that I think could be a tough matchup for him. And, you know, this is a fight that Durrell really needs to win to stay alive in the Super 6. If he loses this fight, he'll have no points going into the third round, where he then has to face the man whom I believe is going to win the tournament, Andre Ward. And ironically, I think that Durrell is the one who matches up better against Ward than anybody. But if he's going into that fight 0-2, I'm not sure that I like his chances that much. But he's got a chance against Arthur Abraham, and I know a lot of people whose opinions I respect in the boxing community think that he has the ability to outbox Abraham. And, you know, I expect that to be a pretty good fight, and I'm definitely looking forward to the next round of matchups in the Super 6.
Nick?
Yeah, I have to agree with Rami. I think that Andre definitely has a good chance going into the Abraham fight. I read somewhere recently that he said his plan is to target the body, which is what I think probably the best strategy would be to target Abraham. He has the Winky Wright type of turtle shell defense, but unlike Winky, he leaves his body a bit more exposed. And that was one of the things I thought Taylor could have done a little bit better in his fight against Abraham, was target the body more, aside from just trying to, you know, snap that jab out that kept getting blocked by the gloves, even though it was commendable that Taylor would try to do that. But other than that, Andre seems like a very nice kid. He seems like he's really confident. And I think that the Froch fight was something good for him, because even though it was close, it was a bit cagey. Some people were turned off by the fact that he clinched a lot. But at the same time, he says that it was a learning experience, and that he realizes he can go 12 hard rounds with someone of world championship caliber. And that only gives him more confidence, which I think is something that he definitely needs going in against a guy like Arthur Abraham, who, like he said, could end the fight at any moment. So I think that he definitely has a lot of confidence going into that fight. It's good to hear him wanting to postpone the fight so that he could be 100% going into the ring. And I look forward to seeing it, and I hope we can have him back on the rope sometime soon.
Yeah, I certainly do too. You know, I think he's a very good shot against you know, Arthur Abraham, just like the boxing experts say. They think he has a good shot. He could possibly outbox Arthur Abraham. He has to get past that defense, which is very tough. Like you both said, the body attack, I think it would be a very good plan. You know what? It was great talking to him. He's very confident. He seems to know what he wants to do, and he doesn't seem to let that loss bother him. So, you know what? I wish him the best of luck, and I can't wait to see his fight on March 27th. But we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Michael Oliveira. All right, guys, we're back after a short break. We have Leather No prospect Michael Oliveira on the show. How's it going today, Michael? We lost him for a second there. Don't worry, guys, we do have him for you on the line. Michael Oliveira, welcome to On the Ropes.
Hello?
Hello, you there? I don't know, we assume a little bit of a hang up here on the line here. Michael, are you with us? All right, guys. Well, apparently we have a few technical difficulties, so we're going to take another break a little bit longer this time, and hopefully we'll get it right. All right, guys, we are back on the show. We are back with our guest for this evening on our second go-around. Michael Oliveira, how's it going?
Hi, how are you? First of all, I would like to thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to be on Eastside Boxing.
Well, we're very happy to have you here and have you on the Rope show. Now, Michael, for the fans out there who don't know very much about you, you're 11-0, you're a 19-year-old prospect. Can you tell the fans a little bit more?
Yeah, I'm 19 years old. My nationality is from Brazil. I was born and but raised in Miami, Florida. I started boxing when I was 13 as a game, actually, to lose weight and just give it a shot. And as the time went by and practicing, I became better at it. I started to take it as professional a year ago, and my record now is 11-0, and we're still going on with it.
Yeah, now, something that some fans will probably be interested to know is you come from a very affluent family. What makes you want to be a professional boxer?
Well, despite the fact that I do come from a different type for boxing, it just makes it harder for me because I have to prove that I want to do it, that I step in the ring regardless whenever because I love it. And when you do something for the love of it, that's why I think people I'm so good at what I do.
Yeah. Now, you've had a little bit of the on-the-job training. You only had two career amateur bouts. How's that been moving up the, moving into the boxing world about that amateur background?
Well, it's been great. I mean, training hard like everyone does. But even though I only have two amateur fights, my boxing career is going perfectly. I couldn't ask for anything better. Even though I would have liked to have at least 10 or 11, because a lot of people look down at me for having only two amateur fights. They think I'm green, but surely I will prove otherwise.
Now, you're 11 fights in your career, you're 11-0, you have 9 knockouts. How do you feel about your movement in your career, how you're being moved along?
Well, my management is doing an excellent job. My trainer, Danny Hawk, over here at the Normandy Gym on Miami Beach, everything is going perfectly. My management is doing a great job at it. And, we're moving along perfectly. I couldn't ask for anything better.
Now, interestingly enough, your last two bouts only took place 11 days apart. How do you feel about fighting that quickly?
I mean, like I tell everyone, if you're ready and you practice well and you train hard, the fight is won at the gym. And if you're ready, you're ready.
Yeah.
And actually, my second to last fight was in Haiti, 3 weeks before the earthquake. And I went there to help to fight for the Brazilian soldiers of the UN. And I gave them a little happiness before the tragedy we had.
Yeah, it's certainly very tragic what happened over there. And it's very good that you got to fight over there before that event there. But I mean, how do you feel about the whole situation? What's happening over there? Do you think it's being well handled?
I mean, I'm positive that even with the economy, everyone's gonna help out. I mean, we need it, but I don't agree that we had to wait for something so tragic to happen for us to realize that other people need us. So, with that being said, are we gonna wait for something like that to happen to Africa or to Indonesia, a third world country, for people to open their eyes?
Yeah, I agree with you there. Hopefully people learn from this and they don't continue that. But I'm going to go over to my co-host, Jeff Ciani.
Hi, Michael. A pleasure to speak with you. And
a pleasure to speak to you, too. Thank you very much for letting me be on the ropes with you guys.
Oh, it's our pleasure, Michael. And one of the questions I'd actually wanted to ask you now that we have you on the show here is, if I'm not mistaken, you are now trained by Danny Hawk, correct?
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your working relationship with him as boxer trainer, and maybe if you could share some of the things that he's been able to help teach you to improve your game.
Well, it all started off about 7-8 months ago. I was a little bit on the heavy side, and we trained hard, road work. We run about, 10 miles every other day. And we work, I mean, we're a fantastic team. We work good together in and outside the ring and inside and outside of the gym. We do mallet work. We do heavy bags. There's this thing on the beach that we call the sand hill. And we work that a lot, too. I mean, everything is good. I mean, the type of sparring we have at the gym sometimes are harder than the actual fight. And I truly believe that the fight are won inside the gym.
Great. So nice to hear that you're getting the tough preparations in the gym that have been tougher than some of your fights.
The preparation we're getting at Normandy Gym is fantastic. We're now having Bernard Hopkins and Shane Mosley come to prepare for their fights. I've had the opportunity to do a few rounds with Glenn Johnson, and I'm looking forward to help Shane Mosley and Bernard Hopkins get ready for their fights. Actually, Bernard Hopkins also trained at our gym for the Kelly Pavlik fight.
Interesting. Now you mentioned Glenn Johnson, that you've done a few rounds with him. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
I mean, he's an amazing fighter. He has his own unique styles. He keeps coming forward nonstop, punches after punches after punches, and he could do that for 12 rounds.
Okay, great. Now changing things up a little bit here, Michael. I'm curious, now that you're a Brazilian fighter born in Brazil, how does it feel to be largely considered the heir apparent to Freitas?
I mean, I don't like to be compared to any other fighters. I mean, I watch everyone's fights, and I'm like a sponge. I grasp and I take a little bit of everyone. But as he did, and I'm soon going to have all the responsibilities on my shoulders representing my country.
All right, now, Michael, you have a pretty interesting nickname. It's called Chairman of the Board. How'd you come up with that?
Well, it has nothing to do with Frank Sinatra, even though he was one of the greatest of all times. I do listen to his music before I go into the ring. I come to see that it calms me down. But I picked Chairman of the Board because it's a strong name. It brings respect. It brings it shows that you have class, and you know, I want to help, and I'm trying with my name and boxing and my image to help other kids follow my footsteps and, you know, get out of the struggle of the streets.
All right. Now, talking a little bit about your boxing, what do you consider as your best asset? I mean, what do you think you do in the ring the best and that, you know, will help you be very successful as a professional boxer?
I mean, I'm very patient, but I fight on the outside. I'm a boxer and I'm a brawler. I would say that my best would have to be the inside work, a brawling. Because I think all the fights, every fight ends up in the middle of the ring, fighter against fighter, just fighting it out.
Yeah. Now, you actually mentioned something a little bit earlier in the show about, you said you weighed a little bit much at that point. And in your bio, it says you weighed over 100 pounds over what you weigh now. How'd that come to be, and how'd you lose the weight?
I mean, I used to not exercise, and I loved food and stuff like that. And so, but with the hard work, I used to weigh 235 pounds actually before, and because of my nutritionist and Danny, we've worked together hard, actually like about 7 hours a day, and we got the weight off.
Nice. So you're kind of taking the James Tony route, but in reverse. So I think it's definitely a smart way to go about it. But we're also joined with my co-host, Nick Powers.
Hey, Michael, pleasure to speak with you today. Since we're on the subject of weight, as of right now, you fight in and around 160, 168 pounds. We just had Andre Durrell on the show, and we've had a few other members of the Super 6 tournament on the show. My question for you is, how do you look up to the guys like that in the division who have made it to the forefront of the sport, and how long do you think it'll be until you actually get to that point in your professional career?
I mean, like I said, they're all amazing fighters. They all have unique styles and techniques. And I look up to them because, like I said, I'm a sponge. I like to grasp a little bit of each person and put it into my own style. But one thing that I look forward to is to being on MGM this year or maybe in the beginning of next year fighting on the MGM. And I use all of them as an inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Now, Scott, sticking with the subject of weight, you said that you had been a bit heavy before weighing in at around 235, obviously with your height being at 5'9". That isn't the ideal weight for you to be at, but you said you were working with a nutritionist and your trainer to get the weight off. Do you have any plans to maybe move down even further in weight as your career progresses, perhaps down to middleweight or junior middleweight at 154?
Yes, sir, I do. Actually, my last fight was at 158, and we're looking to bring it down for my next fight, actually, that it's not positive yet, but it's going to be April 24th in Brazil with a Golden Boy, and I will be probably the first Brazilian to fight for the IBO and the WBC youth title. And we're looking to see if I could fight for that title at 154.
Great. Now, since you brought up Golden Boy, you mentioned previously that having trained at Normandy Gym, you've now had the chance to interact with both Bernard Hopkins and Shane Mosley as they prepare for their fights with Roy Jones and Floyd Mayweather, respectively. And you also mentioned that Hopkins trained there for the Pavlik fight, which some fans did know. And he mentioned their training in the gym was pretty much very close to hell. But I was actually wondering, what have been some of your interactions with those two legends and also their trainer, Nazim Richardson, if any, and what have you learned from them so far?
I mean, with Glenn Johnson, I've learned to be patient and just keep coming forward. And Bernard Hopkins gives me a lot of advice. We sat down and we spoke, and he actually got to see me sparring once before, and he said that I have tremendous talent. And as I was speaking about Golden Boy, I was actually in Mexico the 20th of February as a guest from Oscar De La Hoya, and I had the privilege to meet him and the honor, and they're looking forward to see my promoter, and is negotiating for the fight April 24th in Brazil with HBO Plus.
All right. Now, Michael, you know, talking a little bit about your career, where do you see, you said you're when you're going to be fighting next, but, I mean, how soon do you see yourself possibly getting a title shot, not just one of those minor title shots, but how far in your career, I mean, how long do you think it'll take you to get one of the major belts?
I see myself going for a title shot. At most, a year to a year and a half.
All right. Well, that sounds very good. Well, changing things up a little bit, I'd like to ask you a little bit about the current boxing scene. I don't know if you pay attention to it, like a lot of other fighters do, because they're mostly your boxers are also fans of sport. But what are your opinions of Manny Pacquiao as a fighter?
I think Manny Pacquiao is one of the greatest fighters we've seen also. His velocity, his strength, there's not many people that I think now in boxing will be able to keep up with him.
Yeah, and he actually has a fight coming up March 13th against Joshua Clady. How do you see that one going down?
I think that Joshua Clady does not know what he's getting himself into. I mean, everyone said that Manny Pacquiao and Miguel Cotto was going to be a pretty even fight, and Manny Pacquiao made Cotto look like if he was beginning. So I think Clady doesn't know what he's getting himself into.
All right. So do you have a prediction on that one?
I think Manny Pacquiao is going to win by a knockout on the sixth round.
All right. Excellent there for the prediction. Well, I have just a couple more questions for you before I let you go. Who are some of your favorite fighters growing up in the sport? Who are some of the favorite fighters that you watched that really got you into it?
One of my favorite fighters were Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali. One that I really, really see myself alike is Rocky Marciano, and also a Brazilian fighter, Eddie Joffre.
Awesome. Well, it's been great talking to you, Michael. Is there anything you want to say to all the fans out there and the fans over at EastsideBoxing.com?
That hopefully everyone gets to listen to me today and to follow my career, because I will be the next champion for Brazil.
All right. Well, like I said, it's been great talking to you. We wish you the best of luck. We wish you the best luck in your fight coming up in April, and we hope to have you back soon.
Thank you very much. I really hope I get to be back with you guys, and it was an honor. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you, Michael.
Nice to meet you, Mike.
Take it easy, Michael.
All right, guys. That was Michael Oliveira, a very promising prospect there. He's very realistic about his goals and his career. That he's moving, they're moving him along very well. Apparently he'll be fighting for two minor belts, the Latino youth belts in April. I'm going to go over to you, Nick. What are your thoughts on the interview?
Oh, he seems like he's a really, really reserved and a really great kid. I mean, he was very polite. He constantly thanked us for having him on the show, which I can't remember the last time somebody did that more than he did. And I think that he definitely shows that he has a lot of confidence in himself. I think he may need to loosen up a little bit, but hopefully we can have him on the ropes as he continues to progress, as we have with other prospects like Daniel Livingston and Peter Quillen. But it definitely sounds like he's got some good aspirations for himself as a fighter. Moving down in weight to 54 is probably a good look for him. And I think that he's getting a lot of good advice from guys like Hopkins, and he's interacted with Mosley. He's already sparred with Glenn Johnson, and that shows that he's got tremendous promise. So I think that as long as he keeps on the right track and he keeps learning and as he goes along, that he probably will have a bright future in the sport. And he seems like a great kid.
Tommy?
Yeah, I was a very nice opportunity here to speak with Michael here on the ropes. I enjoyed speaking with him and hearing what he had to say. And, you know, we've had some young prospects on the show in the past, before, in addition to Livingston and Quillen and the guys Nick mentioned. We've had Sean Porter and Fernando Guerrero and a few others. And, you know, one of the things I really liked that Michael Oliveira said today was that, you know, sometimes his training in the gym is harder than the fights. And he mentioned how he believes that the fights are won inside, you know, when training. And I think that's a great attitude for a young prospect to have, where it shows that he understands how important work ethic is to succeeding inside the ring, and that training and doing the work in the gym ultimately pays off come fight night. And I think that's a great attitude and a great outlook that he had there. And I definitely look forward to following his career more closely and to see where he goes from here. Very nice man, very soft-spoken, and I wish him the very best of luck, and I'm interested to see how his career progresses.
Yeah, now for any other fans out there that want to find out a little bit more about Michael Oliveira, you can go to www.michaeloliveira.com, and you can read a little bit more about him and what's happened in his career, and maybe I'll have this interview up on there. But like I said, though, it was a pleasure talking to him. I think he's being moved around correctly, and you know what? I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. But anyways, guys, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Kevin McBride. right, guys, we are back with Mike Tyson Conqueror, Kevin McBride. How's it going today, Kevin?
Good. Very good. Thank you.
Well, we're happy to have you on the show. Now, you last fought in 2007 against Andrew Gullotta. Could you tell us if you're still planning to make a return to the ring?
Yeah, I lost a few fights, you know. I'm like the Cinderella Man, you know, the modern day Cinderella Man. I hope to make a big comeback and fight this year and fulfill my dream and be the first-born Irish heavyweight champion of the world.
Yeah, now before we get into your fight with Mike Tyson, I want to ask you a little bit about what happened after that fight. You fought a fight with Brian Pauly, you got a win, and it just seemed like you were in a position to get a big shot at, at least at a belt. You got a pretty high ranking out of beating Mike. Were you all disappointed how your career went after that fight?
Yes, I was promised all these fights, you know, legitimate world title fights like with the world champions like Lamont Brewster, Lakovich, and then the big giant Valiov, and also Johnny Ruiz, but I just couldn't make that connection, you know, for some reason. And, after beating Mike Tyson, I lost, a lot of heart for boxing because I wasn't getting the fight I wanted. And, we lost Brian, I lost Mike Molo, and, the fights he had I shouldn't have lost, but I couldn't get up for them kind of fights, you know, and just the way it goes, but you appreciate the wins, you know, like, so beating Mike Tyson was, it was a great fight for me to win because at the time, I was only called a journeyman, and probably still called a journeyman if I come back, but anything can happen in boxing. All it takes is one punch, as it shows, you know.
Yeah, and certainly in the heavyweight division, that's the most prevalent there. I mean, for a fighter to be in his prime, you don't see a prime heavyweight unless they're in the 30s, so I think there's certainly time left for you, but I'm going to go over to my co-host, Jeff Ciani.
Thanks very much.
Hey, Kevin. Pleasure to speak with you. And what I wanted to ask you about was your last fight in the ring was against Andrew Gullotta. And in the first round, it appeared you had him in some big trouble. What happened in the first round of that fight?
Yeah, I got a month's notice, I was training for a month before the fight, and I switched trainers to Buddy McGarrett. Buddy McGarrett's a great trainer. The first round I went in there, to take care of business, and Andrew Gullotta, he passed the first round. He wanted to quit on the stool, I heard after the fight, but you can't, the result of the fight, I lost, in cuts in the sixth round, and I wasn't in the shape like I was when I fought Tyson, but, I give it my best, and take my hat off to Gullotta, he won. So, it was for the North American title that would have got me back in the picture somewhat, but I have to just, make the comeback of my life. And, I had a few injuries. I broke my back and three places. Then I actually tore ligaments in my ankle. And things didn't work my way for the last couple of years, but I've come back, from injuries, and I'm making a comeback, and I want to make that movie of James J. Braddock about the Cinderella Man, where the Russell come through in my life, because I have a few short years left, in boxing, and you never lose your power, like George Foreman proved, at 45 when he knocked out Michael Moore. Your power never leaves you. Everything else can't leave you, but your power doesn't, so I have a chance with the help of God.
Now, again, in the Gullotta fight, Kevin, you never actually went down when they stopped the fight. He kind of switched to a southpaw stance, and he caught you with a good shot that it looked like it hurt you. But did you think that the stoppage was a little early?
I think so, but, the referee, he says, you're too cut up, and I says, well, that's, it's your you're the middle man, you know. I believe, you know, I started to come back strong, and, you know, it's just like when I'm forcing things, he got me a good shot, you know, and opened up, and, you know, that's life, you know, you have to take it like when I fought the likes of Mike Molo, and then, you know, no way he was in Mike Tyson's league, you know, as far as a fighter, but he was a good, record, you know, he's, you know, tough kid, but on a good day, he wouldn't beat me, you know, and hopefully I can get a fight down the road with him again and prove myself that it was just one of those nights, you know.
All right, now, touching back a little bit on your career and touching back about what we were talking about earlier, and with your fight with Mike Tyson, now, we know all what happened in the fight, but I want to get your perspective on it now. How did that fight come about? How did you get the fight with Mike Tyson?
I had to box very poorly for a few years now. The how I got that fight was, you know, it was, I was boxing with, over the last few years before that fight, I hadn't really fought that much, but I hooked up with Rich Capiello, and he was a promoter, local promoter in Brockton, and through Mike Moynihan, he was a liar, a friend of mine, they worked out a deal that, suited me, and the fight happened, you know, come by to me once and twice before, and it failed, you know, and I says, no matter what they offer you, the next fight, you know, just take it, because it'd be a pleasure to meet him, because I idolized Mike Tyson growing up, and I happened to get a slot in with a fight in the ESPN main event, and I took the fight against Kevin Monte, and I actually, I had a few weeks' notice for that fight, but I actually beat him, and it kind of opened doors, you know, and Mike Tyson just lost to Danny Williams, and next thing, I get the call, you fight Mike Tyson, and I says, yeah, sure, no matter what they have me, I'll take the fight, and so next thing I know, I'm fighting Mike Tyson, so I go meet Mike Tyson, like, probably 7 or 8 weeks before the Washington press conference, and I'm shaking Mike Tyson's hand, I appreciate it, it's nice to meet you, you know, you're a legend, and he was a legend to me growing up, I idolized him, and next thing, I switched my plan about boxing after that. You know, I if you ever see that movie Forrest Gump, I kept running for and training. You know, training. I never trained as hard in my life, and I was focused. Had my manager is Jerry Quinn now at the moment. He's an Irish guy. He's from Boston. He's from Galway back home, but he lives in Boston, and they called him the Mighty Quinn. He took over and he took in charge, but at the time he put up money ahead of time before the Tyson fight make sure I was getting the right sparring, and I had a hypnotist working on me as well, so every little thing helps you. It's like a Christmas cake. When you're making a Christmas cake, you have to have all the ingredients to make it right, and it just came right, you know. Growing up, I idolized Mike Tyson, and I said to my father, Lord of mercy, me dad young, and I says, I'd love to fight Tyson one day, and he says, if you work hard and believe yourself, one day it may be happening, and true as God, it did.
Yeah, now, Kevin, what was the press tour like of Mike Tyson? I mean, there's still one of his famous quotes was there, you know, and he was talking to your trainer, and he was saying, you're going to get Kevin hurt, so, I mean, what do you think about being on that press tour with him?
Well, you know, like Mike Tyson, for all fairness, he said he's going to cut me up like a fish, and he's, you know, what he was going to do to me, but I had already planned, you know, my mind around it, like I was going to take care of business, you know, I was going to be the, like, this was like the fight of my life, you know, to be in, and I was going to be like, it's like the Rocky Balboa, you know. I came and I trained and I focused that no matter what he said, it didn't matter. You know, talk's cheap. They like to say talk's cheap, it takes money to buy booze. But it's actually when you're in the ring and when that bell goes, you know, you have to put it together. And fair enough, Mike Tyson, he looked, you know, I'm glad I didn't see him in the gym before before the fight. He looked sharp in the ring, you know, with Jeff Fennec there. But, the, you know, if you put your mind to it, it just shows you, like, I would, myself now, probably, to say I was like the shock of the decade, you know. And, like, I said to everybody, I'm going to shock the world, but I shocked myself, you know. Like, it's amazing when you go up into that ring and people say to you, and like reporters saying, what was going through your head before the bell? And I says, honestly, what the hell did I get myself into? This is a serious sport. It's the toughest game in the world. And when you're fighting a man like Mike Tyson, a legend like Mike Tyson, you know, you put your life in there. And that's what I did, like I said. My daughter at the time, I had two kids at the moment. My daughter's grown, yeah. She was like 8 months. I said, there's only two ways I'm coming out of that ring. It's one with my hand raised in victory, or two on a stretcher, and I'm glad my hand was raised in victory. But the fact that fighting him, boxing in the Olympics for Ireland was my first, great feeling to be a participant in the sport. And to box Mike Tyson, and under the circumstances, was a pleasure. And Mike Tyson is still a legend to me, and here he's in the Hall of Fame now. He should have been in there long ago. He is a class fighter, you know. He might have been the same fighter. To say he wasn't the same Mike Tyson, he wasn't this, he wasn't that, but sure, before those had saying that he was going to be fighting for a world title, he was going to win the next world title, but like I say, you never lose your power. So, like George Foreman proved. So, I did what I had to do. I held him. Even in the sixth round, he hit me so hard. I got him. I said, "Is that all you got?" And this, when he got frustrated, he started headbutting me, and trying to break my arm, and he actually tried to bite my nipple off. I don't know what round it was.
Tried to bite your nipple off.
I have teeth marks on the chest, you know, and I'm saying it's the most cruciating pain I ever went through in a fight. You know, I've been knocked out on the ground, and it doesn't hurt, but like, because different circumstances, but that there in the fight, you know, there's no defense for biting, you know.
I never heard that come out before.
That's on my daughter's life. That's the God's honest truth. He tried to bite my nipple off. And, you know, on I think it's one of those shows, some of them shows were saying, I'm glad he wasn't a midget, so was I. As a kid,
go ahead.
The whole beautiful part of the whole night of fighting Mike Tyson was, you know, people don't realize this, as far as me beating him was a great, you know, feeling, but growing up, since I was 9 years old, and I heard the word boxing and Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali was there, and his daughter fought there, that's why he was there. And after the fight, and I was in the press conference room, and someone came in and whispered in my ear, says, Muhammad Ali's leaving, he wants to say goodbye to me. I stood up and I said, listen, since I was 9 years old, I dreamt about this man. I watch this man. I ain't going to miss this. So I went out and I gave him a big hug and a kiss, and I says, you know, this is the greatest night of my life as far as boxing is concerned. I'm after meeting a legend, I'm meeting the greatest of all time. And Muhammad Ali said to me, he says, I'm the greatest, you're the latest. So I says, you know, like, that alone, you know, will live with me forever. And the fact that, you know, I had a dream, and I still have a dream, is to become the firstborn Irish heavyweight champion of the world. And like, who's to say, like, people say, he's a dreaming man, he's not really, he has lost to these guys, fighters, but boxing's such an unpredictable sport, like, if you put your mind to it and stay focused, you can accomplish everything. Like, I said, when I beat Mike Tyson, I'm going to drink Ireland dry. I was broke. 9 months later, so I couldn't drink out and drive, but I give up the drink. I don't drink anymore. And imagine you beat the most feared man in the world with something small, it beat you. Like a drink, but I'm Irish, nothing to do with anybody, and it's just me. I love a drink, you know. Irish people are tend to love drink. I think everybody in the world loves drink. Some can handle it, some can't.
Yeah, no, that's certainly the case of a lot of people there. But one thing I want to touch on, though, what do you feel about the end of the fight, the end of the fight where Mike Tyson was sitting on the ground trying to have the referee pull him up? It was a little bizarre, the ending to the match.
Oh, definitely, you know, he's been hitting me with everything he got in the 6 rounds, and he's cut me, and, you know, I'll be really swearing with Irish words come out of my head. Is that all you got? But, hit me with uppercuts, and then I kind of, you know, I was leaning him all night, you know, trying to muscle or hustle him up, you know, because he's such a dangerous man, he hits so hard. That you'd have to, you know, do whatever you can to survive, though, you know, the storm. And then I kind of, like, leaned. It wasn't that hard of leaning. I kind of fell around, like, exhausted or whatever. And, I seen him trying to put his arm up to the referee to give him a hand up. And me, such a guy that loved him, you know, as a hero, legend, growing up, I was nearly going to go over and pick him up, but I said, Jesus, maybe he'll stay around. And he got up, I juiced him, and he walked to the corner. And imagine the most feared man in the world, most feared man in the world, retired on the stool to an Irishman, an Irish heavyweight champion at the time, you know. So it's just, you know, I created a wee bit of history in my life to beat him. But, and as far as Mike Tyson, you know, I've seen him in a few movies at a hangover, and I've, you know, good luck to him, and I wish him all the luck in the world. And he had tragic sadness in his family, lost his daughter, and my heart goes out to him. I wish him all the luck in the world. And if he ever wanted to fight again and me again, let's get it on. Let's get it on. And have just a radio stateside cover.
I think a lot of people would be all for Mike Tyson coming back and maybe seeing him get another fight with you there, because he certainly I don't think it was his most proudest fight there. I don't think he was in the best of shape. You definitely performed well and did yourself proud. We actually have a caller for you, Kevin. I'm going to let him on the line here. Area code 856. You're on with Kevin McBride.
Hello, Kevin McBride. How are you doing today?
Good, and yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good. I'm an amateur boxer. I'm supposed to make my pro debut March 6th in Atlantic City, New Jersey. I'm in the middleweight division. I look back and I remember where I was, how old I was, and everything when I saw you beat Mike Tyson. I'll be honest, I didn't expect it. I honestly thought Mike Tyson was going to walk over you, but you proved a point to me that anything can come true as long as you put, you know, your heart, soul, blood, sweat, and tears into everything, you can get anything done. So I admire you for that.
Yeah, you know, and the way they say is there's only one sure way of winning, and the guy goes, what's that? Don't lose. But as far as, like, you know, your first pro fight, like, I got a draw in my first professional fight. I thought I won the fight, but you have to just believe in yourself and stay focused. And, you know, like, if they say, you know, a small stream of water will move a mountain, they ain't kidding. You know, if it keeps going, it keeps going, it'll take away a mountain. So, you know, anything you want to accomplish in life, all you have to do is believe in yourself. And even if you don't accomplish it, you've accomplished because you believed in it and you did your best. That's all you can do. We're no better than any of us, no worse than any of us, but all we can do is do our best.
Right.
I wish you luck in your fight, and keep your hands up.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, caller. And now I'm going to go over to my co-host, Nick Powers. Nick?
Hey, Kevin, pleasure to speak with you today. Actually, being from Massachusetts, I remember reading a little bit about you in the Boston Herald right before your fight with Mike Tyson. And if I'm not correct, you were training in Brockton, Massachusetts at the time. My question is, Are you still training in Brockton, and what was the atmosphere like, if not training in a place where Rocky Marciano and Marvelous Marvin Hagler made their name?
Definitely. I went back down to Brockton and asked Goody. Goody's was in World War II. He's great. He trained Marvelous Marvin Hagler. He actually has pictures with Rocky Marciano, and Rocky was going to, train with him in the gym, but that tragic accident that Rocky had, but he's a legend as well, As far as I'm back training down in Brockton with Goody Patrinelli in the gym, because I believe in, you can have 100 different brilliant trainers in the corner, but when you're in that ring and the bell goes, there's only two people: there's you and the other guy that you're fighting. So you have to do what you got to do to win that fight. And like I said, one punch can change a chapter. And hopefully, I come back this year and get a few wins and start making a wee bit of noise again. And hopefully, this time around, I'll get that opportunity and fight for a world title and be the first-born Irish heavyweight champion. Regardless, I did the unbelievable, beat a man of Mike Tyson's stature. It was, he's probably an A-class fighter. Not enough people class him. I'm probably, a D, But it doesn't matter. It just goes to show you, if you train hard, any sport, anything to do in life, if you believe in yourself, you can overcome anything in this world.
All right. Well, Kevin, I want to ask you another little interesting thing. You have an interesting nickname, the Clones Colossus. Who gave you that?
I don't know. Some man, before he died, he created this name for me, the Clones Colossus. I can't think of his name at the moment, but he was a good man. But the Colossus means tall and big. I'm sure one time they used to call me, I had different names, the Demolissima and the Irish Leprechaun. But I'm 6'6", and Leprechaun was kind of funny. But I was called a Leprechaun until I fought a guy in Atlantic City. His name was Stanley Wright, and I go in the ring. I know his name, but I didn't know what size he was, what make he was, or anything. But he was 6'10", so there was no point in calling me the Leprechaun anymore. But stuck with that name, the Clones Colossus. Sounds good, there's a fellow, former world champion, Barry McGuigan, from back home. When I was growing up, I was 13 or 14, he was world champion, fellow champion. They called him the Clone of Cyclone, so they say, because they called him the Clone of Cyclone, they named me the Colossus, Clone's Colossus, but all good. Names are good, but at the end of the day, you could be called whatever, but when you're in the ring and that bell goes, you have to do the job, win, and there's only one sure way of winning, is that's don't lose. But I have a lot of, six losses, I am, sometimes you have to appreciate the wins, after losing, but I lost fights, and I know it just wasn't, right time wasn't me, but I have to, accept them because it's on my record, but it's all a learning process,
Kevin, we have just a couple more questions before we let you off the line. I want to get your opinion to the current heavyweight division. What do you think of the current two-headed champion of the Klitschkos?
I think the Klitschkos are, remarkable fighters, they train hard, and also they've been put to the floor as well, and I believe making a comeback. If Klitschko understands me, or if anybody understands me, let's get that fight on with either brother, because I believe I have the power to knock Vladimir or his brother, right? And but why I say that is because I'm heavy-handed, and I believe they're going to see the Cinderella Irishman come back and take on the world. And there's other heavyweights there, like David Haye. Congratulations to David Haye, and good luck to Johnny Ruiz when he fights him in England for the world title. You know, there is other fighters out there, but, you know, when I was beating Mike Tyson, I was promised all these world title heavyweight fights, and they just didn't materialize, but maybe it wasn't meant to be, you know, maybe that's life. But now, me going on the downslide of things, maybe he's all done, McBride's all done, and maybe they give me the opportunity then, you know, and hopefully they do, because I believe I have the tools to accomplish my dream, and I'm going to set myself out to do that, and with the help of God, I have two beautiful kids. My son's Queeveen, he's Kevin, and that's Kevin Irish. He's two years old yesterday, and my daughter's five, and I'm going to fight for my dream, and I believe in myself, and that's all I've got to say about that. But the world champions that are out there now, hopefully one day there'll be one United undisputed heavyweight champion, and I get to meet that undisputed heavyweight champion to become the undisputed heavyweight champion.
Now, speaking about your comeback here, something that the fans of OTR are kind of interested in is they wanted to know if you had any interest in possibly fighting the comebacking Peter McNeely, who also resides from Massachusetts. I think that'd be kind of a good comeback fight, and also be a huge fight in Massachusetts. Would you have any interest in that?
You know what, Peter McNeely is a good friend. I know Peter, in all fairness, Peter probably retired now, but, you know, and you have to take your hat off to him. He went in and faced Mike Tyson and, you know, and proved that not to be afraid of a man like that stature, you know. So any man to get into the ropes, into the ring, against anybody, no matter if they have 25 losses and one win, you know, you have to take your hats off them, because it is the most feared sport of all. It is one-on-one, and it is there's a feeling about boxing, you know, like for us boxers, the adrenaline, you know, there's nothing can ever match that. And for me to say, back to fight Peter McNeely, you know, I'd rather see his friend. You know, I'm on a mission. I want to fight the best, so I'm going to go with my manager, my friend, my lawyer, Mike Moynihan, suggests for me to do as well as what's the best avenue to go to really got to do to get that chance again.
All right. Well, before I let you go off the line, how soon do you see yourself getting back in the ring?
You know, that is the multi-million-dollar question. No, you know, actually, I don't really have any dates for any fights. I had an injury in my wrist as well, so I was just back running now, back in, you know, getting in some kind of shape. So, you know, hopefully in a few months, you know, I'm not 100% sure when. I have to work out with my manager, Jerry Quinn, and my friend, Mike Minan, but hopefully not too far away, not like, as I said, not too many months away, you know, so just to get back in, to get the show going, and whatever it is, it doesn't matter, you know, I believe in it. I'm on a mission this time, is to win and do my best and become the firstborn Irish heavyweight champion of the world.
All right. Well, Kevin, is there anything that you want to say to all the fans out there and the fans over Eastside Boxing?
I just want to say, you know, God bless you, and have a safe life, and take care of yourselves, and believe in yourselves, and enjoy the show, and keep listening to Eastside Radio or Eastside Station on the web.
Yep. Yep, on the ropes. But, yeah, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Kevin. You've been a very interesting interview there. I think you gave us probably the clip of the week about Mike Tyson's biting your nipples. So we've certainly been a pleasure talking to you, and we wish you the best of luck in your return to the ring.
And he might deny that, but I think if you look in slow motion through the fight, you can actually see him on the chest, you know. So he was very, I tell you, excruciating pain, but that's life, you know what I mean? You got to win at all costs. The man is a legend as far as I'm concerned, and God bless him in his life, and God bless everybody that's listening to this broadcast and to you and to your. Your friend, your co-host, I want to say is watch out this year. The Irish-born heavyweight champion of the world is going to be Kevin McBride, the Cinderella story of our modern time. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Have a nice day, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin.
Take care.
Good news, Kevin.
All right, guys. Well, that certainly was a very unique interview talking to Kevin McBride. He reminds me a lot of when we actually had Peter McNeely on the show, and very interesting. Gives very much detail into his stories. And I'll go over to you, Remy. What are your thoughts on the interview?
Well, I thought it was great hearing what Kevin had to say, and I can't help. I was laughing pretty hard over here when you interrupted him and said, "Oh, wait a minute, time out." When he mentioned that the nipple biting thing, because I didn't hear what he said at the moment. I'm saying, nah, he didn't say that. And then I heard you trying to get him to clarify, and sure enough, he mentioned the bite mark on his chest. And, well, that was something. But it was overall a very interesting and enjoyable interview, I thought.
All right, Nick.
Yeah, I got to agree with Rummy in that sense. A lot of guests we have sometimes are a little more hesitant to talk about some certain things. They hold back maybe a little too much. But Kevin sure wasn't afraid to hold back, and he gave us some pretty great quotables. And hopefully, we can get a little bit of recognition from that. I believe one of the guys in the chat said that could be an OTR exclusive, that we're the first ones to find out that Mike Tyson tried to bite Kevin McBride's nipple off. So, I mean, we're getting some firsts here at OTR. It's revolutionary. It's groundbreaking stuff.
Certainly is, and I'm very happy. I was very happy for Kevin that he walked out of the ring that night with his nipple intact, so congrats to him on that. But, it was a pleasure speaking to him, and I'd like to see him make a comeback. I think it'd be interesting, and if he ever fights Peter McNeely at Boston Garden, that would be certainly a heck of an event. But it was great talking to him. But moving on, guys, and speaking of the heavyweight division a little bit, apparently the fight is now signed. It's official. Chris Areola will be fighting, speaking of nipples, Chris Areola will be fighting Thomas Adamek in April. I want to get Remy's thoughts here. You've been looking forward to this fight or not looking forward to it for your man Adamek. How do you feel now that it's official?
Well, the one thing I'll say, and I don't think that this fight coming has come as much of a surprise from anybody, because even at the Adamek Estrada post-fight press conference, they mentioned that Areola is next. They knew the date. They knew that it was going to be him on April 24th. My initial reactions after the fight with Estrada were that Adamek might be in some trouble and that he needs to fight a perfect fight in order to beat Areola. And I still tend to favor Areola, but one thing that I think is very interesting in all this that gives me reason to believe Adamek might come out victorious is, for whatever reason, Adamek's camp really wanted this fight. His trainer, Gamitric, the people around him, Kathy Duva, Ellen Haley, they all wanted this fight for Adamek. And that tells me one thing. They could be wrong, but they believe that they see something in Areola's style that they think matches up well with Adamek. I'm not sure that there is something like that there, but his people are eager for this fight to happen, so that's got to make you think they're confident about something going into this. And I do think Adamek's power at heavyweight isn't what it was at cruiserweight or light heavyweight. I don't think he's well-suited for heavyweight in the sense that I can't see him ever beating the Klitschko brothers. But Adamek is a good fighter with a lot of heart, and that's one area in Areola's game that's questionable. Adamek always gives himself the best chance to prepare. He's always in great shape, unlike Areola, who often comes into the ring a little bit sloppy and doesn't seem to take his career as seriously. you know, maybe Adame can win this fight, I'm starting to think. He has the skills to outbox him if he could avoid getting clobbered. He has the will to win. He has a pretty good chin. And his people want this fight. So, you know, I'm definitely interested in seeing this, and I'm glad Adamic's getting back in the ring so quickly.
Nick?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting fight. Personally, I'm not too sure that Adamek can actually overcome Areola's power necessarily. If Estrada was able to rock him at heavyweight, I'm really not sure that he'd be able to stand up to a powerful guy like Areola. Side note, Jen, I'd just like to point out that that was pretty classic when you just said, speaking of nipples, we're going to talk about Chris Areola. And, I mean, I know, you know, Romy tends to favor Adamek in most things, but I think he makes, you know, some good points. I think the fact that he knows a lot of members of the camp and that they actually really wanted that fight shows that they may know something we don't know, or they just have supreme confidence in themselves, which is something that you definitely need at this point in the sport of boxing, you know. And I think that if Adamek really wants to make a serious run at heavyweight and doesn't want to go back to cruiserweight, then this is definitely a defining fight for him above 200 pounds. And if he's able to actually impress in this fight, which I'm not sure he'd be able to do, I do think he can outbox Areola, but I'm not sure he can stay away or not get clipped with something big for all 12 rounds first. So if he is able to pull it off, though, I got to give him props, and I think that he'd be ready to face some better competition at heavyweight. But honestly, the way I see it going, I think that Chris Areola is probably going to end up stopping him somewhere late in the fight. I'm not sure that he's going to be able to stand up to his power.
Well, I have to agree with Nick here. I think that Thomas Adamek is just not best suited for heavyweight. Beating up an old Andrew Galata who was way past his prime and then taking a light puncher like Estrada and going very close to him and, like Nick said, getting rocked by him, it's not a good sign at the heavyweight division. I honestly think Chris Areola will come in shape for this fight. I don't think you'll see him at a 271-pound clip. I think he'll come in shape. I think he'll come in ready. You know, his career is on the line. HBO still loves pushing him in there. They like him. He's a fan-friendly fighter. So I think he's going to come in there in shape. I think he's going to, you know what, his power shots, I think, are just going to be too much for Adamek, who has not been tested at heavyweight. He's not been tested, you know, to see if he's got a heavyweight chin. I mean, guys like Cunningham and Estrada are certainly rocking him. I think he can get hurt in the heavyweight division, and I think, you know what, he will get hurt by Areola. I think he'll end up, you know, he's a slow starter, and I think it's one of those situations where he could actually get stopped early. My prediction for the fight is that Chris Areola will win by seventh round TKO. He's got quick hands for a heavyweight. He, you know, he moves well. He has decent defense, and I think Adamek is too much of a slow start to overcome it. But that's my opinion.
Quick question on that, Jenna. I was just going to ask. You mentioned you think he'll come in shape. I'm curious. What do you think that translates into on the scales? Because Areola has mentioned, I believe, 240, 245. Is his target weight for that. Do you think that's realistic for him?
I think it's very realistic. I think he weighed in for a fight with a guy named Malcolm Tan. I think he weighed in at 235 pounds, and that was only a few years ago. I think it's very possible that he could weigh in at that weight clip. I mean, I think he weighed in, I think, around 241 for his fight with Witherspoon. So it's definitely a chance of it. I think, you know, somewhere around 245, 248, I think he'll actually come around to this spot. I think he's finally learned that he really needs to come in shape and take himself seriously. All right,
okay.
Guys. Anyways, we've come down to the end of the show. I want to give the people out there a shout-out just to tell them what some upcoming fights. Kendall Holt is fighting Rusaba. Then you got Wilfredo Vasquez, who'll be fighting Sonoda. Those only two fights out there. It's not a great week for boxing, but I thought I'd let you know. I'd like to thank all four of our guests, an OTR first, four guests in one show, Vicious Vivian Harris, Michael Oliveira, Andre Durrell, and, of course, Kevin McBride, who gave us a very entertaining interview. It was a pleasure to speak to them all. I hope the fans enjoyed the show, and hope you tune in for us next time. We have something very special in store for you. It's a legend of the game, and I'll leave it at that, and catch you next week. Later.